Get ready to walk the walk of life with us. You are listening to Right Back At Ya, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously. Hosted by He Can't Feel But He Can Touch, David Lim. And me, the tide is high and I'm holding on for dear life, Joel Babington. Hello, David, how are you doing?
These intros are becoming increasingly raunchy as the years go on.
Just putting it out there for you, darling.
JB, the last time I saw you was at your birthday at your place. That was such a fun night. Did we dance to Billy that night? We danced to a lot of 2000s pop, obviously.
Look, if we're in control of the playlist, Billy's always on it. Priority acts, every playlist.
Do you know, I had such a fear looking through my camera roll the next day. Like, I just woke up, I was just like, oh, you know, I opened up my camera roll. I was like, why is there so many videos, so many selfies? And it's just like...
Why shouldn't there be?
I know, but we were having a great time. But
we're
it was
having
just,
a great time.
It's so funny looking back and you're scrolling, you're like, wow, what went down? But I loved that video of you dancing, you and Harry dancing to Samantha Mumba, Baby Come On Over.
Love it. But darling, look, you're a young diva. You are allowed to take as many selfies as you want. You're a gorgeous young diva. We're living life. And when the Prosecco's popping and the 2000s pop tunes are blasting, which is every Friday, Saturday night for us, maybe a Wednesday night if it's a tough week, then absolutely go for it. So Davo, why are we here today?
Joel, this was not even on the spreadsheet, was it? Because we have already done Billy Piper. We did Billy as our second ever episode, like, what, almost 6 years ago? And I'm frankly too scared to go back and listen. I did not re-listen to that episode in research for this one.
Oh, no.
I can't. You know what I'm like with our older stuff. I really do try to distance it. Like Billie's trying to distance herself from her music career is how I distance myself from the earlier episodes. Look, it's great. We had fun, but we're just, you know, 6 years into it now. We're just a little bit different and we're a little bit more polished. So it really felt like a good time to revisit Billie because of Scoop, right? Everyone's talking about it. She's been doing so much promo.
And it feels like, as well as being in Scoop, doing so much promo, absolutely killing it. It feels like even with Billy, she is happy to acknowledge and reflect on her music career more than we've ever seen before.
Oh, yeah. On that Table Manners episode with Jessie Ware and Lenny Ware, she actually talks about it a little bit more than she usually would. And I was quite pleasantly surprised.
100%. And I was watching a BuzzFeed interview with her and they bring up the pop career and they're like, come on, Billy. Are we going to get an Eras tour? And she jokes, obviously it's a no, but she's like, never say never. Where I feel like before it would be like a hard no, let's move on. Or yeah, like, let's not even bring it up.
Yeah, that question would have been scratched off the list even before she got in the room. Like,
yeah, PR would be like, let's lose that one.
But so I think as a result, we're feeling a little more connected to Billy the pop star than we have in a long time. So it feels like a right time to do it. And obviously, you know what we used to be like? We used to cram so much into one episode. We're not going to do that.
Absolutely not.
We're just going to focus on Billy's second and final studio album to date.
To date.
To date. Joel always likes to put that in. Literally, the pop star, the girls can say, I've retired. I'm no longer doing music. And Joel will still caveat with...
To date.
To date. The final album, to date. Because never say never.
Never say never. Look, I'm not going to take credit for any of this, but I did meet Billy in December last year. And I'm saying, did I plant the seed of her enjoying her pop career?
Tell me about that interaction. Because I remember seeing the selfie and I was like, wow, that is it.
So Billy was doing a signing for charity and it was a case of they were having different celebrities on the tills of this pop-up Billy was doing it. We were like, right, it coincided with our lunch break. Let's get down there, toot sweet. And I was like, let's just go. Even if we just sort of see her through a window, I just want to see what's going on. But we managed to queue, get something, talk to Bill, went straight in with like... Well, I actually was in the queue and I was figuring this out because I'm not only a huge fan of Billy's pop career, but I am a huge fan of her as an actress, as a director, everything she does. So I tried to map it out in my head. I was saying, so I was like, right, I'm going to hit off with Honored to Meet You, Loving I Hate Susie, went to go and see a Q&A at Rare Beasts, the film she directed, loved it. Is she planning to direct again? Then going to sandwich in, just have to tell you, Day and Night is still one of the best songs of all time. Uh-huh. We all still love dancing to it on a night out. Just letting her know how loved pop Billy is.
But you were easing your way into the music, which is very considerate of you, because you don't want to overwhelm her.
No. And
you were ramping it up. It was a crescendo.
Yeah, I was with some of our friends and some of my colleagues, and they were like, you know, we were all together, and they were like, you really had a moment, Joel. It was like you two were vibing, because we were riffing back and forth, and she's saying, like, you know, well, thanks for going to see Rare Beast. Yes, planning to direct something again. You know what it's like. It just takes forever. And me like, yeah, obviously, Bill, I know all about that. and then, yeah, it was like, I'm not going to ask her anything about the pop career, because that's rude, but I'm just going to have to let her know the love for it.
And what was her reaction to the love for Day and Night?
She just went, that's a good one. And I was like, that is all I need. Yeah. That is all I need. And then because it was around Christmas and Last Christmas was recently put on streaming, our friend Jack goes, and we've been listening to Last Christmas in the office.
Oh, shut up, Jack. She's probably embarrassed about that one. And what did she say to that?
She was just like, oh, great. I think she might not have even clicked that we were talking about her version of Last Christmas.
She probably forgot she ever recorded it.
So, you know, it was very quick. And also, you don't want to...
overstay your welcome.
You don't want to overstay, as we know. I learned that from as a teenager with Kimberly Walsh telling me I've got to go. But you also don't want to, like, emotionally dump on these people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go up and, you know, a two-minute thing from me of telling her how much a fan I am, what it means to me, da-da-da, is a lot for someone to take in. So I was trying to tread it very lightly, but also while giving her the love in a way that felt like it could be digestible and not like, get the fuck out of here. In the words of the MC, why don't you get the F out? But it seemed, I was really like over the moon by just how, from this very small brief moment, how happy and positive she seemed about it all.
I feel like in recent years, she must have had a lot of gays and a lot of like people our age come up to her and just show her so much love for the pop tunes. So I think as well, you know, maybe with age and her being more established in her acting career, she can sort of reflect on it and just be a little bit more at peace with it, you know, rather than being at war or at odds with it, because it was a very difficult, stressful time. She said many times in interviews that she's never worked harder in her entire life than she did during the pop years. Like, it was, you know, borderline child labor laws. Like, come on, cuff up Nicky Chapman. Sorry.
Oh, David.
We're not throwing Nicky Chapman under the bus, but we were looking at CD liner notes for this album earlier, and I messaged Joel. I was like, oh, Auntie Nikki was part of the management team.
Not to sound like an idiot, like, but what I love about us and what we do and how obsessed we are with all of this is that I love 25 years on, we still find out new information. Like, I have been a Nicky Chapman stan since series one of Pop Stars, and I never knew that our Nikki did the PR for Billy. And don't worry, listeners, I have Nicky Chapman's memoir pre-ordered. That was an essential purchase for me. So I hopefully will be getting some, well, we'll definitely be getting info about all our pop faves, but hopefully our Bill will make an appearance in there as well. But yeah, I just love that there's still these new nuggets we can find, and there'll be things along the way in this episode that was brand new to me.
Yeah.
Us doing this is just an excuse to continue to deep dive even more than we would anyway.
with our research, we do it ourselves. We're messaging each other, but we're like going on Discogs and like zooming in on the scanned CD booklets. And
I mean, David, that was really good detective work from you there.
Thank you. Poirot, watch out.
Just a couple of pop detectives and pop destroyers. So, Devo, I mean, look, I could talk about my brief interaction with Billy all day long, but I think before we even jump into it, and we need to get to it, can you read us a lovely five-star review?
This one's left by at DJ Hawes, a fan of Kylie, says the subject heading. The Australian and British version of Legends Only. 5 stars. And then 5 emoji stars follows.
And I'm going to take that as 10 stars.
Yeah. If you add it all up.
Yeah. Which is, you know, what we do. So not only 5 stars written, 5 stars emojis, 10 stars. I mean, what an honour. We love the boys at Legends Only. Shout out to Bradley Mew Mews and T. Carl. So to be put in the same breath as them is an honour. And if you are loving what we're doing, please do hit that subscribe button, leave us a lovely 5-star review, share it with a pop-loving friend, and follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. Right, David, we're going to be talking about this all day and night, so let's get to it.
I find it so much fun diving into the research for this one, especially after we just did Britney's Oops, I Did It Again, which was the same year. So we are back in the year 2000. And I mean, this is something I never used to think about in this way until I met you. But Joel's always said Billy is the UK's Britney, or was it Britney's the American Billy? Which one was it that you said?
So
what's your theory?
David Lim, we need to take it a step back. Louise.
Oh, here we go. She's come up again.
Is the pre-Britney, UK Britney. Then, for a beat, Britney was the US Billy, because Billy came out first.
Yes.
Then quickly switched to Billy being the UK Britney, because them two are on the same level to me. They are here, you know.
Yeah.
The handshake.
The handshake emoji.
The transatlantic.
It really pairing. Was such synergies and parallels in their careers at this point. So as you said, Billy did come out first, June 1998, with her debut single, Because We Want To. That made Billy the youngest artist to ever debut at number one on the UK charts. She was only 15 at the time. 4 months later, Billy releases her debut album, Honey to the Bee, which would go on to be certified platinum here in the UK, selling 3 million copies. That same month that Billy's album was coming out, across the pond, Britney's Baby One More Time single was coming out in the US.
Wow.
You can imagine that excitement. Imagine if we had access to the internet at that time.
Yeah.
It just would have just been like, whoa, what is happening in the world?
I know. Dial-up wasn't ready for it.
It wasn't ready to download those pictures and those videos. Definitely not video streaming friendly.
Not even in SD, let alone HD.
So the first time Britney and Billy actually meet on the charts was when Baby One More Time debuted at number one on the UK singles chart. And that same week, Billy's third single, She Wants You, was sitting at number 71 after 10 weeks on the charts. But they will have a much closer run in the following month when Honey to the Bee enters at number 3, bumping Baby One More Time down to number 4.
Just letting her know.
You know, that is literally back to back, side by side. That's the closest we've seen these two divas together on the chart. But we will have another chart running, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Absolutely.
Now, before we even begin with Billy's second album era, let's do a quick recap for anyone that's listening and not really familiar with Billy Piper, the pop star, which, by the way, is probably a lot of people, my brother included.
Sean
knows Doctor Who. He knows Billy for Doctor Who. So when I mentioned that Billy was a singer, he was like, what? I was like, yeah, she was a very successful pop star. You know, she was doing much more at your age than you ever did. Sorry, didn't mean to drag my brother. We love you.
Look, she did it much more than all of us did. A 15th youngest female to have a UK number one smash hit.
She started off early there. So, you know, young teenager Billie Piper was training at Sylvia Young Theatre School. She got her big break after starring in a commercial as the quote-unquote face of Smash Hits magazine. Now, it was at this time that she caught the eye of a really big record exec, Hugh Goldsmith. Now, Hugh was just being put in charge of a brand new pop label launched under Virgin called Innocent Records. And his first signing? Billie Piper.
Wow.
The string of singles from the first album were all huge hits in the UK, even found success internationally. She toured Asia for a little bit in 99 as well. Like, I remember actually seeing the Because We Want To and Honey to the Bee videos in Malaysia.
Wow.
That was the first time I saw Billie, yeah.
And was that you'd not moved to Australia yet, or you were on holiday in Malaysia?
No, haven't moved to Australia yet.
Wow. She was a global-ready pop star.
She was a global-ready pop star. And I love that they were already, like, pushing her across Asia. And also, like, I think she was doing some promo in America as well for the first album.
So she was.
They were ready, yeah. So also 99, further to this global promo off the back of the big album, she also did that super iconic Brit Awards performance, Thank ABBA for the Music, with Steps, Tina Cousins, Cleopatra, and Bewitched.
My introduction to ABBA.
Wow.
That and the 18s, the greatest pieces of history in ABBA's legacy, let's be honest. That is the big reunion that we all need.
But what a time for teen pop movement in the UK. Like, that Brit performance just really summed up the joy. And, you know, we often come back to that image and that performance so much still, don't we?
Yeah, we come back to it a lot because one of the greatest gifts you've ever given me is that single on vinyl.
The day I saw that in Brixton Market, I shrieked. Like, they thought there'd been a murder. I couldn't believe my luck. I was like, I ran to the till before anyone could touch it.
Still with press release, which we love.
And yes, it did have a copy of it. Did you ring the number, the fax?
Yes, I'm very interested in this.
Is Billie available for any promo? So, Joel, shall we get into Day and Night, the very first single of Billie's second album?
So let's go to May 2000, Day and Night, one of the biggest pop smash hits of our lifetime, a song that still goes as hard today as it did then. If not, it goes harder today than it did back then. This song, the version that we have, the main version, the only sort of main version we have, is already billed to us as Stargate Mix. Now, what do you think is going on here? This is co-written by Billie, Elliot Kennedy, produced by Elliot Kennedy, Mike Percy, and Tim Lever, with additional production from Stargate. Is there an original version tucked away in a drawer somewhere? What are you saying, Elliot Kennedy?
Yeah, we need to find out, because the album was released first in Japan and with a slightly different track listing. There's an original version of Something Deep Inside on there. I wonder if that version has the original Mm-mm. Day and Night. No,
always it's this already version. Stargate.
Because by the time that album got pressed and released in Japan, Day and Night was already out. So really, truly, they whatever the original mix is, they've kept it locked away.
Yeah. But it's just so interesting that with that in mind, it was still always billed to us as the Stargate mix, even on streaming today. I wonder if it's contractual somewhere of like, if Elliot and co have produced it and then there's been additional production, part of the agreement is that it has to say Stargate mix.
I was looking back at Stargate's work at this time, and it's so fascinating because there are so many pop hits in the last 20 plus years that you might not even guess was by Stargate. Here at Right Back Atcha, obviously a 2000s pop music podcast, the stuff we cover of their work is Number One, Day and Night. Mm. We love that. Mystique, mm-hmm. One Night Stand, The Atomic Kitten, The Blue Records. That is well within our world. But even before they got all that, the first stuff they ever did was S Club 7's S Club Party.
Wow.
So Billy was the next big artist they work with. This was so early in their career. And then they would go on later in the 2000s to do Beyonce's Irreplaceable, all the Rihanna stuff like Rude Boy, Only Girl in the World, Alexis Jordan's Happiness, like such range with their work. But I find it so interesting to be able to go back and be like, oh, Billy was the second big pop act they did.
I hope they still have a big plaque of Billy's
of
Day and Night.
Yeah.
With this being originally produced by Elliot Kennedy and Co, it's part of Steelworks Music. They also produced that original version of Something Deep Inside and some other tracks deeper on the album. You can tell they're all fantastic tracks, but maybe the album was finished or somewhat finished and they were like, we need something with a bit more American-y, Swedish, hard-hitting pop that has really taken over. This isn't 96, 97, 98 Spice Girls world. We now have post-Britney,
Max Martin,
NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, much like how we were just speaking about in our last episode.
Yeah, rightfully so, you know, reflecting the movement in the teen pop market. Yeah. So I think that remix absolutely fulfills the brief. This is an absolute banger that still sounds so incredible, so dramatic when it starts.
It's one of those tracks that, yeah, infectious from the beginning of it. When we are at Push the Button or a One More Time and a night when this comes on, not only are you straight on that stage, if there is one, you're instantly on a higher realm.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Joel, shall we talk about the music video?
This is an example of when British pop still had huge budgets and was giving you global pop star, directed by Cameron Casey. It features our Billy dancing in a nightclub with a group of friends and in various different locations, including some stunt work from Billy.
Oh my God, the stunt work is incredible. But I just want to go back to, you know, this concept of her dancing in a nightclub. You know, I was really pleasantly surprised watching this back because in the space of 2 years, they've really grown up Billy's image. You know, she's about to turn 18 this year. They're really leaning into this more sultry pop star image. She's going to a nightclub. You know, even that scene where she's dancing on the street, a little bit of a nod to her first music video, Because We Want To, but where that was so kids TV friendly, this was like
going
grown
out.
Up pop girly on the night out in Shoreditch. You know, that was, I just love the parallels of that. And also it really made me think about, not to keep bringing up Britney again, but it's because it's fresh on our minds from doing the last episode. It really made me think about how much more conservative the approach was with growing Britney's image at this time. You know, they were being a little bit more cautious over there, whereas I felt like with Billy, it was kind of more moving along with the times and being bolder and being more real with the audience. Would you say that's a difference in attitude between Americans and British?
Yeah, it definitely had that edge and that grit. But also in a way, to me, it feels like it wasn't doing it to be controversial. It was doing it just to reflect.
Just to be real.
Reflect the person and teen. And obviously, Billy, if you say otherwise, we are here and we are listening. But it feels like Billy wanted to be cool at that time. She wanted to dance like that. She wanted to be going to a club with your friends. At 17, that is what you want to do. Like, you're waiting for, you're just on the cusp of being able to go out.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, she was reflecting what a lot of teens her age were doing.
And I was a kid at the time, so if it was, I missed it completely. But I don't remember there ever being any talk about any controversy, the way we just spoke about how the reactions to Britney were at the time. Neither of these girls deserve to have a conversation like that. But it is interesting to see potentially America's reaction to that, to England's reaction, where it's just like, here's a great pop star. She's grown up 2 years. She's being a teenager, she's having a night out. And we also must acknowledge she's gone from Billy in the first album to Billy Piper.
Yes, very crucial. Yeah. And, you know, that in itself is a reflection of her maybe wanting to appear more mature. You know, Billy maybe sounds a little bit more teen Teeny Bopper.
100%. And even in the case of first album era Billy, we've got that Billy logo. But now,
which is like very cartoonish, yeah. Isn't it? With like a kind of pencil, like a marker sketching. Whereas this one is, the font is very clean, very, yeah.
Elegant, very simple, modern, very clean. Yes. Now, David Lim, this world, this music video.
I'm obsessed with this nightclub.
Exclusive nightclub. And it feels a little bit like hint of sci-fi or its own world. This isn't a nightclub you could just go to. In there, it kind of feels like they're in like a nightclub that is also like a pod or a spaceship.
I love it. It's just so futuristic. And, you know, when you watch this video back, the directors really thought about the circular theme. Mm. You know, the theme is always a circle. She emerges from a tunnel. And then the laundromat with the washing machine, you know, and the drain pipe with the circle, that's always a transition point in this video. So that feels incredibly chic, very modern, but also, like you said, creates this sense of like, it's not off this world.
Yeah. I love all that. I've not even considered the circular, but as you say, I'm instantly seeing all these circular visuals in my mind that we see in the video. My favourite scene out of the whole thing, the laundrette. Why are laundrettes such a rite of passage in the world of pop, especially British pop?
It feels like a communal space. It has a bit of a retro feel to it. And it also is like very grounding, very real. So I wanted to talk about the two different setups because they literally are giving you day and night, because the nightclub scene and her dancing on the street with a stunt of her like walking up the walls, nighttime. And then the daytime shots of her in like a Y2K calf and then the laundromat, you know, it's giving you the contrast. Even the makeup is different. You know, it's like heavier eyeliner, sweatier look for the club night scenes. And then the day scenes are like the hair is softer. The glam is more ethereal, you know, more girl next door vibes, jeans and a nice top. I love that play with the contrast there.
Yeah, 100%. And I've not even thought about how it is realistically day and night. But yeah, it's both fabulous and surreal while also grounded at the same time. I really do love this. Mm. Everything's relatable, but not accessible. Even though the first album campaign was so successful, it felt like a lot was riding on this. And wow, what a way to absolutely do it.
I mean, speaking of a lot riding on this, was this around the time where she was already dating Richie Neville from Five?
Yeah.
And like the fans were a bit upset.
Yeah. So at the Smash Hits Poll Winners Party 1999, and this is the side of this era that I really don't love to reflect on. We're here to talk about the positivity. And maybe when we look at Smash Hits, we love the fun side of it all. But there was such a weird negative side to when you look back at these magazines and stuff. So Billy was voted sad loser of 99 at the Smash Hits Poll Winners Party.
And you think that was a reaction to Five fans feeling territorial that...
Yeah, because she was our number one pop princess. And then, you know, to people like me that was a young boy that is gay, but obviously isn't acknowledging that at six or whatever, none of that touched me. I just loved this female pop star and never knew of all this backlash that's going on. But then when you've got teenagers and territorialness of people and a male pop star, all this was going on as well. So
it gets a bit ugly. And we see that kind of reflected in K-pop now. You know, it's that kind of extremism in fandoms. And, you know, the parasocial relationship is manifesting itself stronger in those particular tribes now.
The difference is in K-pop, I'm part of that conversation. Stay away from him, he's mine.
But yeah, it's just interesting when you said, yeah, a lot was riding on this because, yes, not only was it going to be a new album era for Billy. So, yes, first single absolutely matters. But also I felt looking back, yeah, I wonder if that was kind of part of the label conversations and all that. Maybe there was a little bit of trepidation of like, how will Billy be received when she comes back? I mean, they had nothing to worry about. This song's a banger.
They had, Yeah.
They did whatever they did right. So shout out Nikki Chapman, shout out Innocent Records, because this was a 10 out of 10 execution.
And that's why that the proof is in the pudding. So all of that, if things like that happened in 99, it's not fair. That's when she's, you know, between album campaigns. So people are going to be savage with with nothing going on Billie's side to defend it. The minute Day and Night is released and it's like, yep, she's back. She's on top.
Yeah. What you got to say, mate? Yeah.
What have you got to say? So there were some amazing performances of Day and Night, you know, right at the end of this year, Smash Hits poll winners, which we'll talk about a bit later in the episode, but also Top of the Pops, Union Jack top.
That picture still comes up a lot on my feed.
As it should.
Absolutely iconic look, yeah.
And then one I sent you earlier today, she was on, she went down under, she was on By Demand on Channel V, and Billie is giving you office manager chic, jeans, shirt, long sleeve, two dancers.
It's expensive to fly people all the way out to Australia. She can only bring two dancers, and they probably doubled up as hair and makeup as well, and security.
And
PA and publicists. Yeah.
And I mean, look, we do see the dancers will take on backing singers when need to later in the campaign. So what I love as well is there were no wings on this show By Demand. So the backing dancers just stand on either side until a couple of counts of eight when they're ready to come in. But the camera goes to one of them too early. So you just see them standing on the side. Waiting for their cue.
Yeah, that camera operator was not briefed on how to shoot this. No. But you know what? We live and learn. But love that Billie even went to Australia to promote. I completely missed this at the time. But, you know, I didn't have Channel V probably in the year 2000. But love to see it. A global promo.
Watching every performance of Day and Night, watching the video, that choreography of that routine itself could be billed as like a 3-minute hit workout.
It is so aggressive, isn't it? It is a Barry's boot camp workout. Like the way they were lifting her up and she was like down, like
yeah,
just.
Yeah, and sort of like the press uppy jumping along the side bit.
The lunges.
Floor listen, work. She's girls and boys all going for it.
Oh my God. Listen, we've got a couple of Barry's boot camp trainers listening to our podcast.
Do we?
We do. But listen, lads, do a Day and Night Barry's boot camp class.
Yeah.
And I may be there. I'm not promising anything, but I may attempt.
I'll be the dancer waiting on the side and then just come in and then I'll step out. We also have the B-side, Tinted Eyes. Now, this is giving a bit more sort of acoustic. It's still somewhere maybe a little bit closer to first album, Billie, would you say?
I was looking at the songwriting credits and it's Jim Ma and Wendy Page who...
First album legends.
Yeah, did most of her first album. So, but we love a bit of busker pop from Billie. We haven't gotten that yet. It's giving Day and Night, literally, in the track listing. You know, you've got the banger for the night out. And then the morning after, when you're feeling a little bit vulnerable, a bit tender, a little bit, you know, reflective.
It cools you down just enough by before you change the CD, you go, let's put Day and Night back on again one more time. Right, David. So we get into charts of Day and Night.
Yeah.
So here in the UK, 21st of May, 2000, peaked and went in and peaked at number one, huge smash hit, remained on the charts for 13 weeks before leaving the top 100. And it was certified silver here by the PPI. It is Piper's third and final chart topper to date. At this time, it also made her jointly the female artist to achieve the most number ones at this point.
Oh yeah. And then later I think Jerry, Algeza, Cheryl, Rita, yeah, would take the mantle.
Number eight in Australia on the ARIA charts. I know you didn't buy it, but thank you, David.
How'd you know I didn't buy it?
Because you said you weren't aware of it at the time.
I didn't say I wasn't aware of it. I said I wasn't aware of the Channel V performance.
Putting words in his mouth. Did you go and buy it?
No.
Well, I know you didn't go and buy it at the time, David, but thank you anyway. Number 9 on the Eurochart Hot 100, 13 in Ireland. Come on, guys, what were you thinking? Number 6 in New Zealand. Thank you, New Zealand. Number 1 in Scotland. Thank you, Scotland.
So the week that this debuted at number 1 here in the UK, number 2 was Madison Avenue's Don't Call Me Baby. Number 3 was Britney's Oops, I Did It Again in its third week
in the charts.
So brilliant. Again, you know, we've got this incredible top 3 in pop that is like absolutely legendary. And yeah, that would be the last time that Billy and Britney meet that closely on the charts to date.
To date.
Yes, to underline that, because you never know. So Joel, even before we get into the next single, just wanted to note that Billy had a fabulous summer of festival performances.
Oh, summer of Billy.
She played at Party in the Park in the year 2000. Now, this was a very iconic lineup. This was the year that we had Victoria Beckham performing with True Steppers' Out of Your Mind, which obviously we're still watching to this very day. Also on the lineup that year, All Saints, Backstreet Boys, Christina Aguilera, Destiny's Child, Al Kiley, Mel C, Steps, Five, and Martine McCutcheon. Now that was a pop lineup.
And also looks like Kagi Agi was there wearing a Union Jack t-shirt performing.
She wore a Union Jack t-shirt, did she?
Yes. Oh. Saw Billy on it in Top of the Pops and thought, I like the look of that. She said to her stylist, hey, can you get me that t-shirt?
Is this the year that Destiny's Child, was it Michelle or someone said there's like a million people watching?
Yes.
London police was panicking. They called the authorities down to Hyde Park.
When Michelle Williams says there's a million people watching, there's a million people watching.
Yeah. When she says yes, it means yes, there's a million people watching. Nobody can say no.
Absolutely not. So then let's go to after the summer of Billy to September 2000 with the second single, Something Deep Inside. Shh! Remix.
Joel, I want to ask you, what do you think this song is about?
This song, David Lim, is about emotions.
Okay.
And feeling something deep inside. It is not what you're trying to get at. I knew you would bring this up.
I knew you would lower the tone. It's only because I was watching the video this morning and I was like, why is she grabbing her crotch in the chorus? Like, what is she trying to tell us about something deep inside? Because all this time, for about 20 plus years, I did think it was about emotions, because that's what she's talking about in the song. But then the choreo was giving something more carnal, something more, you know, something deep inside.
I think she's like just giving us female Michael Jackson, so with performance. So I think you're reading too much. And honestly, I'm a bit ashamed of you, David.
I think you need to take a cold shower, David.
Yes. Please. Billy Paul did not need that. But I mean, joking of that, late in about 2005, 2006, she was on the Friday Night Project and someone did ask in the audience, are you embarrassed about having a song called Something Deep Inside? And she replied with, yes.
We all know the feeling. Oh. Oh, dear.
Where do we begin with the journey of this song, David? We just sort of accepted an intro of Shh Remix. We just thought, you know, it's 2000s pop. We're having it large. We're having a good time. We weren't ever presented with another version.
We, in recent years, have heard the original version of Something Deep Inside, which was released only in Japan. And God, Joel, this was such a radically different version, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's a lot more...
soft and smoochy, as Mel B would say.
And I feel like probably this is maybe within the world that the original Day and Night sounded like as well.
Even the way Billy's singing, it's a different phrasing to the chorus of the original, you know. And also that original version has this gorgeous spoken word verse, which got removed in the version we all know. So go check it out. Go listen to these songs back to back and let us know what is your preferred version.
You do the things that make me feel this way. It's so hard to find the right things to say. But follow the notion, the love and devotion you'll find. Something deep inside. Can feel but I can touch. You never can
feel. I just think it's wonderful to, 20 years on, get a spoken word bit that you never knew about. You're just like, oh my God. There's also another version that people dub online, the original version or the lost version. A little bit digging, though, it turns out that this is the Steel and Holiday version, which was released on some of the singles, like within the remixes and all
that. Oh, so it's a remix, yeah.
So it is a remix, but it's very closer to the Japanese original version, but just with some heavier yes in, which I love. I love that in all three of these versions, there are different moments of hearing Billy's vocals and the production flourish. I love the final version, the remix, the single version we got. It's perfect for the dance floor. It's perfect for what we needed at the time for it to be a huge hit. Where it is tapping into that in that trend, some bits are auto-tuned and all of that. But on these other two versions, you are really able to hear that beautiful tone and R&B side to Billy's voice. A few more ad-libs, a little bit more going on there. And I think it's really wonderful just to have all three of these versions.
So, Joel, I must say, this music video is absolutely stunning. I absolutely love this music video. We have to talk about this modern luxury apartment with, I don't know, how would you describe it? Customizable interiors?
What I would describe this as is the Airbnb dance party night in with the girls of our dreams.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. I love the intro where it's just Billy appearing on a bed, magically sliding out. And it's just like you get the black satin sheets and her bare back. You're like, oh, sultry. But she's waking up, you know?
And then she's glam.
Waking up already glam. And then jeans and a nice top, singing outside the window when it's like rain pouring down. And then the girlies are coming over on the intercom. She can see them. That's me turning up at Joel's place for drinks. Buzz me up to heaven, baby.
And I love that, like, it's all this futuristic, like, there's video intercom, like the original iPads, but even then they're still a bit flickery and fuzzy.
Yeah,
they were like, no, it still needs
to be realistic.
There can't be like a direct
HD
video here. But yeah, she really is in this futuristic place. Let's just say this is giving, right? I was recently being very nosy at someone's house. I can't say who. And there was lots of stuff going on. There was a tap, David. There was a tap from the future. The kitchen tap, right? Depending on how you like twisted it, gave you tap water, gave you filtered water, gave you sparkling water, gave you boiling water. Now that tap would be in this Billy Piper flat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Also, what I love about this home, and really, like, we're pivoting to our Architectural Digest era now, because we're like all about the interiors. The magical bamboo atrium that just suddenly appears in the center of the screen.
Yeah.
In case you want like a jungly moment, and then it zooms in and Billy is in there all sweaty.
Tropical rainforest Billy.
Tropical rainforest, hair is wet, clinging to her face. She's just there amongst the bamboo, you know, just like having a great time, being sexy in the jungle.
Look, she's sexy in the flat, sexy in the jungle while still in the flat. Never leaving the flat.
No, she's waiting for her girls to pop over.
While we haven't, like, acknowledged enough, the girls are there and they're all giving it 11 out of 10 with a dance routine.
They've used every inch of this apartment. Like, there's even a scene of Billy on the dining table just giving you a bit of soft movement. But I must say, let's talk about the glam. There's something quite Mariah Carey glitter era.
70s chic.
Yeah, the Farrah Fawcett flick.
Yeah, and the top.
The gold
top. The gold top.
Very, like,
sort of, yeah, like halter neck, would you say it is, with a little bit of, like, I don't know what you call that, like, ruffly bit there.
Yeah. But it's giving, like, 70s glamour remixed for a Y2K audience.
Which is just, like, me all over.
We really, really love that at this time. But then, you know, the more natural looks as well. Like, I think it's really nice as a break from Day and Night's very big production to... I mean, this is nothing pared back, but it's just giving you a different vibe, isn't it? It's like, if that was Day and Night and she's out and about, this is her at home, you know, giving you a more intimate performance. But still, God, what a fucking flat to do it in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, this is giving you, like, fabulous world of a pop star of, yes, this is them at home, but this is them at home.
Yeah.
This is how they do it in their world.
Yeah.
Al Bill gave us some incredible performances of this. One of my faves is she's on CD UK. It's Billy and the girlies giving us full routine, and the Wind Machine is on full pelt.
This is actually my favourite part of watching the Something Deep Inside performances. You know, even that very first Top of the Pops performance where everyone's in, like, a nice white top and jeans, it's gale force winds on that stage. I mean... Where
Hurricane Billy?
Literally, the hair was, like, horizontal. That was how strong it was. Like,
they
was,
all come off their hairs just straight up.
It was giving do not make unnecessary travels vibes, you know? I was worried for everyone in there.
And that's what made it excellent. So, yes, also on Top of the Pops, as you're saying, the girls, white top jeans, but Billy's in a full denim number. Which I absolutely love.
The denim number was a different performance. That was the week the song charted.
I'm sorry. So whilst there's that Top of the Pops performance.
You love that one with the denim.
Another Top of the Pops performance, which I love. Denim. And I'll tell you why I love it, David. Because there's the addition of the stairs in the background. And what I love in pop music and in visuals full stop is stairs. They emerge from the stairs at the beginning, walk down, give you the routine. They'll never go on those stairs again. But I'm really happy that they started on the stairs. Only a couple of stairs. It's all I need. I feel like no one else appreciates stairs and visuals the way I do. Justice for Steps and not the band, because they have justice, which they deserve. So, Davo, shall we talk about First Love, the B-side? Now, this B-side was on the original release of the album. It's not on the UK and international release, but at least we're getting it as the B-side. To Day and Night, as the B-side to Something Deep Inside. Now, I think this is a great mid-tempo R&B. Sounds like something that could have been like a Rachel-led mid-tempo moment on the S Club Seeing Double album. And it's co-written by Steve Kipner of Victoria's Not Such an Innocent Girl, Christina's Genie in a Bottle, and Dreams He Loves You Not.
I think this is, yeah, very much in keeping with the direction and A&R of the second album. It's a shame it didn't go on there.
I think it's a shame as well.
Because there are a couple of mid-tempos on the album that I thought, come on, guys, swap that one out and put First Love back in, you know?
Davo, let's talk about charts for this single. It peaked at number 4 here in the UK, but you know who was at number 1 that week?
Mariah.
Mariah, speaking of the Mariah visuals, Mariah with Westlife will allow it, boys, you know, because you're with the Queen MC. But I love that.
That's
world.
How you sneak into our episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
MC's like, they're with me. Okay, then. Right, then.
And then I'm like,
you got 15 minutes in here, lads. Don't get too comfortable on the podcast.
So, yeah, Al Mariah at number one, featuring Westlife. Billy at number four. Pink with Most Girls at number five, new that week. And Anastasia with I'm Out of Love, number seven, new that week.
What a week.
Like, literally, what a fucking time to be alive.
So much greatness in 1 week.
Where else did this chart? So, Australia, number 20. Now, I'm not going to say what were you thinking, David, because for a British pop star, she's had a top 10, second single, number 20. I think that's very respectable for the Arias.
And I actually don't remember really hearing Something Deep Inside on the radio. So maybe it didn't get the radio support that it deserved, because Day and Night was definitely hammered on the radios. You would hear it everywhere you go. Every time you get in the car, you hear Day and Night on the radio. And also when you turn on Video Hits. But I think maybe also the video didn't get as much high rotation in Australia. I don't know.
Shocking.
I saw it a couple of times, but it wasn't as prominent as Day and Night.
I mean, nothing. I do feel like this is the perfect second single in a way of nothing's going to beat Day and Night, but they still give you a banger. And they still give you an amazing video, but everything's different enough. So it's not going to live in its shadow, but it's not going to eclipse the other one. It kind of, intentionally or not, it knows what it is and it does that really well.
Mm, exactly, yeah. I also can't think of another song on the album that I would have wanted as a second single. I think this was a good fit.
Because we'll get to it in a minute, but you listen to Day and Night and you listen to Something Deep Inside. So you think, oh, okay, it's an album of that. It's not. In a good way, in a way we'll get to. But I do have a few what were you thinkings. So, Ireland, 33. What were you thinking? Come on now. New Zealand, 18. I'll let it slide, but I did expect more from you. Scotland, number 7. I'm not letting this slide. What were you thinking? And 4 here in the UK. Okay? That is okay.
What were you thinking?
I was thinking this is brilliant.
It's her first one to miss the top 3, Joel.
But
did you go
still
out to Woolies and get it?
I didn't go out to Woolies and get it, no.
What were you thinking?
I think I think Day and Night was the world I was still living in. And it took me being a bit more of like a teenage gay to appreciate every single track.
We'll let it slide.
But it was still her. we'll consider it. You are on probation. Also love the cover, sort of a bit of like stranded desert island vibe. She's on a beach with a straw hat.
Not a music video shot, no. It would have been too confusing for the kids to see the 70s glam, because they would be like, Mariah?
Might have helped it if Mariah's at number one. They're going to get this Mariah track as well. I would do, as the, if I was Nikki Chapman, I'd be like, all right, we're going to take a Mariah look from the album, and instead of the dancers, we're going to get 5 lads that look like Westlife behind you.
Suddenly Tommy Mottola's on the phone to Nikki Chapman. What are you doing?
Nikki, I loved you on Pop Stars, but what is this? Tommy, firstly, love to speak to you again. Lovely to speak to you again. But this is just an error. I didn't oversee this at all. Right. Devo, September that year, still the same calendar month as the release. Our Billy turns 18. She has a big showbiz party for it.
It is such a industry showbiz party of the time. I mean, as a kid watching this, you probably think, oh, how fabulous. You know, she's so famous. She's so cool. She's got, you know, all these pop stars coming to her birthday. And then, yeah, you watch the interview with her. Obviously, nothing is what it seems. You know, it seems like a birthday party, but it's being paid for by the record label. It's a
promotional
network
event.
It's a promotional thing. She has to do interviews before the guests arrive. So they get a couple of exclusive chats there. You know, they're asking her, oh, you know, so who's coming tonight? And she's like, oh, I've got a couple of family, maybe some friends and, you know,
colleagues.
Celebrities. Yeah, colleagues.
People I work with.
So, yeah, it just seems obviously, we would like to think that Billie had her real 18th birthday away from the cameras and had a fabulous time, made some wonderful memories. But yeah, this is the showbiz front of it. And yes, there was a cake, there was champagne. And I also love this picture of her being presented a copy of the Sun newspaper, being customized to say happy 18th to Billie. And she's being photographed with it. So
original lineup, Tommy Kits were there, you know, yes. Could you ask for anything more?
Kerry Katona found the camera. That is her gift. She always finds the camera. She makes sure she makes it onto the B-roll. Because I don't even know if Atomic Kitten had launched at this time yet.
Yeah.
It was definitely pre-Hole Again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was like Smash Hits Tour. Well, they're about to do the Smash Hits Tour.
Yeah, and they're on the same label as Billie.
So they've got to be there. They have to be there.
H from Steps was there.
Of course he was.
And obviously Richie from Five is there.
Do you know what's weird, right? Or not weird, but to think about, if we were the age and position we are now, back then, there's a big chance we could have been at that party.
Oh, you flatter yourself.
David Lynn.
What, you think you're going to make it onto Billie's guest list?
You do not keep that in the episode. That is rude. That is rude. All right, then. Let's go to Lou and then get into the album.
Okay. He needs a moment to decompress.
I do.
After that diss.
Well, here we are at the secret location for Billie Piper's 18th birthday party. And I have to say, I do feel very privileged to get all this exclusive access just for a chat with the birthday girl. First time that it crossed my mind, kept on pushing. I mean, you must have been through the whole experience of everyone sort of saying, oh, but she's changed. And yeah, but do you find that it's actually people around you change because they expect you're going to change?
That is it. They become hard because they think...
You're not going to want to
know. That is exactly it. And it's just like, but I'm just the same. You know
so how do you deal with that as a 17-year-old? I mean, I kind of just was on a snowball effect when I was working. I didn't really have time to stop and actually sit and around and look at
everyone. I suppose that's what I'm kind of dealing with. I don't really know what's going on. And I try and understand and try and keep in contact with these people. But, you know, everybody's got a very different lifestyle to me and I understand that. So, but I have got some really great friends, you know.
I have my Manhattan in hand and I'm ready to go. Are you ready to apologise?
Joel, I want to apologise. That was incredibly rude. Of course, you would be welcome at Billie's party if it were to take place in present day with your industry connections and everything. I'm sure we would be on there. Because...
Yeah. I'm fully intending on being your plus one.
Oh, you think you're getting in through me? Oh, that's even better. You what, mate? I don't know why I'm feeling so, like, East London rough and tough today. You what, mate?
He forgets it was only my birthday a week ago. He's just like, nah, that's over.
That's over. We don't need to be nice to Joel anymore. Back to roasting him.
Well, I've got a Manhattan in my hand now, so I'm ready to crack on.
Did you make it yourself or did Alex make it?
Alex made it.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought.
He is our in-house cocktail maker. It's got tequila in it and some other good stuff. We had no lime, so it's got blood orange in it. Brilliant.
Oh, wow. Look at that. So, yeah, the Joel Babington cocktail making course is coming soon to YouTube.
Yeah. I'll just host it. Alex can make the cocktails.
And you can just sip it and give you a review.
So, hot off Billie's birthday bash, the album Walk of Life comes out in the UK in October 2000. As we said, already original release in Japan earlier that year in July.
Now, Joel, before we go there, can we talk about the difference in artwork and direction between the Japanese version and the international UK version? Because it's a different vibe altogether. The Japanese version kind of looks like something from the Day and Night video. It's more, you know, the smoky eye is there. It's more like black interiors.
Big chunky orange bracelet.
Yeah, it's all like black nightclubby interior. So maybe they're like trying to give you more of that Day and Night teen pop star look. Whereas the Walk of Life album that we know it's more natural. You know, it's sun-soaked. It kind of looks more summery, girl next door vibes.
Yeah, close up of a head and a shoulder on the beach sort of vibe.
Yeah,
you know?
Very interesting, isn't it? It's just like different ways of presenting Billy.
There are hints of ethereal, of maybe not ethereal, but like earthy that we'll get to, and that maybe it's touching in more on that. And listening to the first two singles, you do imagine it's going to be a very dancey, poppy...
R&B.
R&B, hints of like a Dark Child and Britney world. But actually, it's much more of a mixed bag. So I feel like that album that we got in the UK reflects that more.
Mm.
But obviously, we love more of a pop star look as well.
Yeah, I think whichever version we would have been given, we would have loved. But I think the Japanese edition was more like one-dimensional. And this more natural look that we're being presented with the album shows more of a journey, more of an evolution of Billy.
Yeah.
Because we've already seen the pop star looks with the smoky eye and, you know, the choreography. By the time we get to the album a few months after Day and Night, you know, it's kind of ready to tell a different story. You know, it's maybe even saying, hey, you know, this is still Billy, the girl next door.
Yeah.
She may be grown up. She may be more show busy, but she's still Billy.
She's still real.
Still Billy from Swindon.
You know, especially under Innocent, this isn't new territory. Atomic Kitten's first album was released first in Japan.
Oh my God, yes.
Slightly different versions and tweaks made following that.
Yes, so maybe this is what they were doing at the time. They were sort of testing the waters with the Japanese market, seeing what the reaction is there, and I don't know.
We're not quite in a leak world yet. So they had that time and were able to do that.
Fascinating time of Japanese releases for our pop stars. Joel, I want to talk about the photography of Walk of Life. This one's done by top fashion photographer Enrique Badulescu. Now, he has shot for David Bowie. He's done like album cover photography for the Rolling Stones, Nene Cherry, but also like shot supermodels like Kate Moss. Very, very top tier. And I absolutely love all the shots of this campaign. It's showing a more natural Billy. Wow. It's Billy outdoors. You know, she's on the street, as what we saw with the Day and Night single cover, just hanging out at dusk on the street. And she's on the beach with something deep inside, very natural again. And this is just like summery. It's free. It's carefree, isn't it?
It's gorgeous. I think you're right in terms of it's giving effortless. And that's the way of saying that's how you then do it with the album cover. You say, look, she's grown up, but she's still her. So I want to talk about the other track from the Japanese release that wasn't on the UK version, Making My Way. Now, this is a banger and it's a Diane Warren penned hit.
I do know Diane Warren could do a cute banger like this.
Neither did Diane. She put pen to paper one day and the power of Pokemon took over, because this was originally on the Pokemon, the first movie soundtrack, sung by Billy. Big US opportunity there. And then this is a slightly new mix for the album. I personally feel it should have stayed on the album, especially with the singles that we've had. It could have done with like another US facing moment.
That Pokemon movie soundtrack was so iconic.
Legendary.
Emma Bunton's original song on there. I think everyone had an original song, right? Is that the idea?
Well, Soda Pop by Britney was on there, but that was from the first album.
Yeah.
Christina's song, I think, ended up being a B-side. Willa Ford is on there under the name Manda. Before, her original name is Mandy. But she changed to Willa Ford because of Mandy Moore. So she's on there as Manda. Vitamin C is on there. Bewitched are on there. Literally legends only soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I agree with you that this should have stayed on the final album, but...
Go sod yourself then.
That cocktail's kicking in.
Not even a bonus track?
Maybe a bonus track. Yeah. I did think...
we'll compromise.
I think it was a little too twee and a little too sweet, but it is a tune. Undeniably a tune. I love the chorus on this one. So maybe it served a different purpose and maybe they felt that it wasn't in keeping with the more mature direction of the album.
I feel like this album, in a way that I'm not mad about, was split in a few different directions. I feel like one direction is American pop R&B, trying to be slightly Britney, slightly Max Martin, slightly Dark Child. Obviously, songs like Day and Night and Something Deep Inside is also a notable album track that we'll get to. Then I feel like there's a lovely pop R&B side to it, similar to what the Honeys were releasing at the time. It straddles that world.
Okay.
Then I think there's a light, edgy R&B, a kind of light version of what All Saints did with Saints and Sinners, which was also released that same month, October 2000. And then I feel like there's the natural progression of the first album that's a slightly heavier and edgy grown-up Billy, but it still lives within that world. And I feel like that's what makes up this album.
I think in its very heart and soul, Billy loves R&B music. I've heard her say before that she really liked doing Honey to the Bee. And because Honey to the Bee was successful, they were probably allowing her to go in a more R&B direction for this album. And, you know, the kind of producers that are on here really represents everything that you just spoke about. Stargate, Swedish, you know, Stargate, Scandi Pop, Quiz and La Rossi, who would go on to work with Jerry and the Pussycat Dolls, Lucas Secken, but also Cara DioGuardi from the American side of things, you know, and Diane Warren, as you mentioned, on the Japanese version. But we've also got like UK R&B producers and writers like Steve Jevier, who's worked with Gabrielle and Take That. So it really is that slightly cross-Atlantic standpoint of a pop R&B album.
So, David, I mean, I've already given my Japanese highlight. What's a highlight from the album for you?
I'd like to give a shout out to the album track, What Game Is This? Now, you know, this is a bit of me.
It is a bit of you.
I absolutely love the tougher R&B edge to this and the electric guitars and everything. You know, there are echoes of Janet Jackson here, I feel. Kind of shows Billy in a more weary state. You know, you look at the lyrics, she's going, did you think you could deny all the telltale signs? The lipstick on your shirt that you said was wine, the crumpled letters in your jeans, the late night calls and angry scenes. What do you take me for? I know the score. Quite more, you know, ballsier, which
absolutely.
We love that confrontation side to it.
But I love, what I love to see is like the versatility of songwriters. We see it along so many people we love. They're brilliant at what they do and they can adapt to so much stuff in the way of, you can't imagine on that first album, all like the really edgy, so different to the Spice Girls stuff on Mel C's debut. Solo debut is actually from people that worked on the Spice Girls stuff. It's everyone's got versatility. Wendy, Jim, they got to show it here. I want to touch on Bring It On.
Oh, now, yes.
This is a fun album pop banger. It's something that I was here for then and still am now. I think it's a real shame they couldn't have like sandwiched this onto the Bring It On soundtrack, which was released in August that year. Like Atomic Kitten had a track on there.
Oh, yeah.
Bewitched had a track on there. It's just a real shame that like this, it would have been a real good like prelude into the album. Again, another good PR narrative going into the album.
And you know, Cara DioGuardi's on this track. So there's that American connection. Come on, Hugh, you could have gotten on the phone for that one. picked up the phone, bullied the producers into adding this song in. You know, be a little bit more Tommy Mottola.
Billy, we gotta get her on. Bring it on. It could be the theme tune to the film. co-written by Cara, and it's produced by Quiet Money, who are the people that did the remix and additional production to Something Deep Inside. So it's great to see what they've done here, sort of at the helm of a track.
Yeah, love the kind of fun shimmying rhythm of this. And also, it's an opportunity to hear Billy showcase a more soulful vocal delivery. It's really fun to see Billy leaning into a more R&B style of singing, as we had a prelude of with Honey to the Bee.
That's you for me. What else for you, Davo?
I really want to also point out Because of You.
Brilliant.
Which is co-written by Billy herself with Elliot Kennedy. Now, this one, it feels like a more sexually confident song, especially with the trumpet solo. It's giving a different vibe. It's just definitely more sophisticated and interesting. Now, the first time I heard this album, this song completely passed me by for some reason. But in research for today, I was like, you know what? I'm really feeling the importance of this one on the album, because lyrically, Billie is sort of telling you about her coming of age in a way. Mm. I was that girl, quiet and shy, scared to say a word to you. I've left that little girl behind because of you. The woman in me is setting me free, living out my fantasy. So she's talking about having a crush on a guy and how it just changes the chemistry within her. Suddenly she's becoming a woman. So I find it so interesting in the narrative of, you know, Billie's growing up as a pop star. This is the second album. She's turning 18 and we're getting more interesting and more confident lyrics like these.
Absolutely fantastic track. What I think's interesting is, yes, you're saying a lot of the Day and Night songwriters here, including Billy, who co-wrote on Day and Night, produced by Steelworks, who produced the original Day and Night and the original Something Deep Inside. So I do wonder, is this what we can imagine this slightly softer sound would have been for Day and Night?
Could be, yeah.
But yeah, love to see it. Billy has co-written 5 tracks on this album, which we absolutely love to see. Right, Davo, what else for you? Well, what's the track you thought I was going to pick out?
I thought you were going to give a shout out to The Tide Is High.
Oh, well, I thought that was going to be a huge talking point, full stop.
Yeah, well, let's talk about The Tide Is High, because
I said I'm holding on for dear life.
Obviously, we all know Atomic Kitten's incredible remake of this song, but this version really was the template for that.
Yeah, so Label Mates, it was allegedly going to be the 4th single off the album for Billy. Apparently, a single mix and remixes were commissioned, but never released. So I'd love to know if the single mix of Billy that was commissioned, that we've never heard, is somewhat even closer to the Tommy Kitts version.
Do you think this would have been a good 4th single for Billie, had she wanted to continue and promote and everything?
I think it needed a single mix, if I'm perfectly honest. I think Billie's version is fabulous. I think we've grown up in the world of knowing Atomic Kitten so well. And even though this is saying this is the template, the Atomic Kitten version is a bit different. The girls bring their own to it. It's very mainstream pop. Could have been a hit in America in a brilliant way. It's obviously featured in the Lizzie McGuire movie soundtrack. So it's very like Radio Disney friendly already, which I think Billie's has more of a bit of like a funky R&B edge to it. And I think it did need a straight up pop remix, which maybe the single mix would have had. But I think it ended up in the right world with Atomic Kitten, especially as Billie had tapped out. I do feel like I enjoy and have so much more time for this album every time we return to it, though, because I love Billy. I love the big singles and I have more of a relationship with the first album. So it's not necessarily something I always return to. But then when we have an excuse like doing this episode to go back to it, I have so much more of a relationship with it. And I think it will stay something more in my circulation.
I wouldn't be mad if they decided to do a vinyl reissue of this. I think that would look really lovely on my shelf.
100%. That would be an immediate purchase for me. So, Devo, this album peaked here in the UK at number 14, the same peak as her debut album. Number 21 in Scotland. Scotland, what were you thinking? Come on, we started off so strong. Number 17 in New Zealand. Number 65 in Ireland. Come on, guys. What were you thinking? And 23 in Australia.
I'm quite surprised it charted so high in Australia. You know, what this is really showing us is that Billy definitely was a singles artist. You know, all her singles are like top five. But the albums don't quite crack top 10. But, you know, maybe that's just what the market is and what her audience is. You know, they're more singles buyers than a whole body of work.
The kids have a couple of quid on their pocket money to spend instead of the parents going, we're going to buy you that Billy Piper album.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. If you didn't already have the singles, then we might buy you the album. Yeah.
But Plastic Pop Records, in a world of gay men in their 30s that are now in charge of their finances, we are all ready and available to purchase the albums on vinyl. Come on, Bill. You know we want to.
Oh, imagine how annoying it will be for her for the next charity pop-up thing she does. And is all these gays lining up with their vinyls?
Can you sign this vinyl?
Joel wouldn't be as reserved the second time around. He's there with his Sharpie.
Hi, Billy. Don't know if you remember. We met before. Here's a picture of us, actually. And love you. Love the music.
Please sign here.
Can you break down the three different versions of Something Deep Inside for me, please? Everyone can wait. It's fine. Next, please.
Yeah, security. I think you need to go. Kimberly Walsh comes in, escorts you out.
Out of nowhere, yeah. You.
You need again. To go. I think you need to go.
So, Devo, we're going to move on to December 2000. Final single of the album.
I thought you were going to say final single from Billy to date.
I was about to say final single from Billy to date. We have Walk of Life. Very different tone and gear shift for Billy that we've heard at this point. It's written by Billy and Wendy, who she wrote most of the first album with. They co-wrote it together in a coffee shop in Milan.
Oh my God, how lovely. That's a lovely story.
Wendy had the guitar out, Billy saying she thinks people thought they were busking. They were just trying to write a song.
Now, this is a beautiful, in my mind, this is a top tier travel documentary song. Like, why is this not on every single David Attenborough BBC travel program? It should be the theme song because it has such a, it's a wanderlust kind of song. And it's also, the lyrics are so grounding. Mm. You know, you almost read this or listen to it and just think, Billy is wanting to connect with something real. You know, she's been on this whirlwind journey as a pop star since she was a teenager. She's got industry stages, she's got gravitas, she's got the fame and everything, but she wants something real. That's what I'm feeling from this song, that she wants a shift and she wants to break away from it. You know, look at the lyrics. Let me care for someone else. I don't want to talk about myself. I need to shed the light on you to understand the things you do. So there's a real empathetic energy to this song, which I think is so beautiful. And it's such a shame that not more of us know this song.
Yeah, I think, do you think there's a world where they were trying to have this as like a Pure Shores moment?
That could be beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, yeah. Now, Joel, I want to say to everyone, the most beautiful Billy Piper music video, in my opinion, is Walk of Life. It is directed by the legendary photographer and director Jamie Morgan of the Buffalo Collective. They are so iconic. They have their own V&A exhibition at one point.
Was Billy in it?
Can you imagine Walk of Life video just playing on every screen? Would love should to see be. That. Absolutely should be. Jamie is still a photographer that's very prolific to this day. You know, he recently did a Naomi Campbell, Alexander Wang campaign. He did Lil Sims's Dazed cover. Absolute wow. staple in the fashion industry. And it's so cool to see him directing a Billy Piper music video.
What's interesting here is that it's so like elevated, it's gorgeous. It's a real advert for
backpacking.
Yeah, come visit wherever this is on your gap year.
Yeah, it is giving gap year vibes, isn't it? Because it's like backpacking Billy. She's on an old bus with a bunch of youths. It looks like they're getting ready for a road trip. They're camping.
I think whether intentional or not, this video, Billy and team's like, well, Billy saying, right, if I'm making one more music video, I'm going to do anything I can to help this transition me into the next period of my career. I want every time you will see me for the last time as a pop star to be in sort of more of a blank canvas way, or in a way where you could go, I could work with them on X, Y, and Z instead of being
pop star
the dancing slick pop star.
Do you ever think watching this video, it's kind of like her saying farewell to us in the pop world? Because she's on a bus. It's like, I'm starting my journey now, guys. I'm off now. I'm off to see the world. So I'm leaving you all behind. I packed my suitcase.
She's on her gap. She's going on to her gap year.
This is her gap year. So you could really read this video in a different way. I don't know whether it was intentional at the time they shot the video. They already knew it was going to be the last thing that she would do. Kind of makes me emotional thinking about it like that. It's like,
so we're doing the music video that's giving you one visual, serious, travel, gap year, artist, cast me in anything. We then have the performances. Performances are a lot more choreograph heavy than my memory had me led to believe. This track has a full routine. She has her backing singers are her backing dancers just lip syncing to the track. There really wasn't a she's going to stop and sing moment. There is choreography and movement throughout the whole song in every performance.
It didn't need jeans and a nice top and hip rolls and, you know, sexy arm movements touching your breasts.
No.
Like, it's not that type of song. Instead of paying the dancers or backing singers, invested in really good stage props and recreate the video on stage. Billy singing on top of a bunch of suitcases, maybe in front of like a fake campfire. Like, give us that fantasy of wanderlust and travel.
But it reminds me of, if you look back at the Atomic Kitten performances of Hole Again, there's the very first one or a very early one that they did on the National Lottery, and they're performing Hole Again with Kerry Still as a dance routine.
Oh my God.
And then after that, it had a real shift to sitting on stools and performing it. And that obviously fits the song so much more. So I think you're absolutely right. And more of a stage, doesn't matter if she's going to lip sync every performance, especially if she doesn't want to sing anymore. Just some simple staging. Her stood there is definitely more what it would have suited. What I found interesting was kind of forced into a interview was asking about what kind of role she'd like to play as an actress. So I wonder if that was already being briefed to kind of force that into interviews. And she says, I don't want to play a pop star. I don't want to play a cheerleader.
I guess she must have been sowing the seeds that, you know, she wants to do other things and she trained as an actor. And yeah, why not? You know, it's an opportunity to just put it out on people's minds. You never know who's listening or who's watching, you know.
So, Davo, we have a final B-side, Caress the Gold.
When you see the title Caress the Gold, two things come to mind. I'm like, is this something sexual that I'm not aware of? Or is this an Olympic winner's single? Caress the gold. Reach for the stars. Try your very best.
When you caress the gold, you can be told and live your truth. Find your way to your destiny. So, Davo.
That song is nothing of the sort of what we just gave you.
This is sort of like an R&B.
Janet Jackson vibes.
I actually think, it's very sexy. I think if you, David Liam, were to release an 80s, 90s R&B seduction album, this is what would be on it.
Okay.
David Liam, caress the gold.
Yeah, you're fired from my A&R team.
Even if this was in the 80s and 90s.
I'm not releasing a song called Caress the Gold. Come on.
All right.
Listen, unless Tiffany's is paying and it's going to be a campaign single, yeah. I'll sing whatever they want. Yeah.
Come on, Nikki. We're out of here. He's fired us.
Yeah.
But yeah, still lovely to see an original track at this point, because I could have slapped on a remix or something else, but we're still getting something. Billy to date at this point, all singles had been top five. In fact, they'd been top four. Here, peaks at number 25 in the UK.
The week this came out was the Christmas number one week, and that was Bob the Builder. You know, what a strange time to be releasing. And I looked on the charts to see who else was brave enough to put out a record. Like, you know, the people we care about, the pop lot.
The girls.
Yeah, well, yeah, some of the girls. Robbie Williams, Supreme, absolute tune. That was the biggest new entry that week at number four. Kylie, Please Stay.
Oh, my fave.
Oh, I love that song. Debuted at number 10. And then, yeah, further down was our Billy. So most people, we sense, would be like, yeah, we'll just leave this one. Let's pick this up in January, you know?
Yeah, it would have been such a good January New Year, New Me track.
It really is.
So as well as 25 here in the UK, 66 in Switzerland, 30 in Scotland. We are going to fall out, I'm afraid. And 96 on the Europe Euro chart. Hot 100. So while that is naturally the end of Billy's career, we just want to touch on today, and as I've just been corrected before this by Alex, the end of her singing career. I kept going, and that's the end of her career. And he's like, yeah, the end of her singing career. There was some great stuff going on at the end of 2000. In November and December, Billy was one of the big acts on the Smash Hits tour. Now, this had Billy, Westlife, A1, plus Atomic Kitten, Girl Thing, and Super Sister, my girls. I like my man like I like my coffee. That seems like an absolutely legendary tour. This was her third year in a row doing the Smash Hits tour.
And she was saying backstage that she feels a bit like a veteran.
Yeah.
Of the tour.
As she should be. I mean, she should have been doing her own tour at this point. Not only did they have the tour, David, in the 10th of December 2000 at the London Arena, they had the Smash Hits Poll Winners Party hosted by legends Katie Hill, Louise, Richard Blackwood. Now, at this show, David, Billy gave us the brilliant performance of Day and Night. I would say one of her most legendary. I'd say it's my favourite performance of her solo career.
This is the one we see lots of pictures of circulating to this very day. It's her in that burgundy two-piece leather outfit with the high pony. You know we love a high ponytail on this podcast.
Which makes sense, right? Because if she's in her short bob era, that pony is a big clip-in, giving very... I'm the British Britney, so here I am in an Oops, I Did It Again adjacent number. I think it's so wonderful that Billy had these amazing to watch, an amazing output of pop star moments right at the very end. Because I think history forgets that these things happened at this time. We just think it was Walk of Life and she was done.
Felt like, yeah, maybe she was given a good send-off.
Absolutely. And then it looks like in early 2001, she did a few promotional appearances. Anything that Nikki still had in the diary. Looks like she did some promo in Spain. I love Billie Piper, the pop star, so much, but I also love the creative tour de force that she is. And I am so proud of the amazing career she's gone on to have and the output that she's given us even in such recent years. Yes, shortly after all this pop stuff, she went on and did Doctor Who, which I loved and has been an amazing launch pad for Billie the actress. And it seems like Billie is only going from strength to strength. I look forward to seeing what she does next as a director, as an actress. And Billie, you know, we are always here. If you ever want to talk about your pop career, you ever want to perform for the pop gaze, we are ready, waiting and frothing at the mouth.
Oh, what a joyful celebration. And yeah, you know, it really felt like it was time that we did this. So I'm really glad to be on that Billie Piper Walk of Life bus.
And we will have our Walk of Life into the next chapter of the podcast. And this is where we announce we will be doing an episode by episode breakdown of Doctor Who going forward.
You know, next month is our 6 years of doing this pod. Walk of Life. You and I have had our own Walk of Life over the years. Yeah.
All right, let's stop here before it gets soft and smoochy.
So emotional.
All right, yo. You have been listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Leave us a lovely 5-star review. Tell a pop loving friend. You can email our hearts rightbackpod@gmail.com. Thanks for all the spam as well, everyone that goes into that email address. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB, and you can follow him at
@lovelyme.
Until next time, keep on walking that walk of life with us. Bye. Bye.